One, two, three, four, just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day, yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
Hey, we're back at full force. It's the Degenerate Podcast with Ryan and Dave and Bobby.
Woo, we're all back.
What's up?
Thank you for holding it down last week, guys. A whole 7 minutes you guys able to crank out.
It was tough.
Hey, you should feel flattered. I literally, when Dave came over, I was like, let's be honest with each other. We can't run this thing ourselves. Let's steer it in the right direction and then just jump off the shopping cart before it crashes into the wall.
We actually recorded 8 minutes, but after post-production, we had to chop it a little bit.
Right. I was sick. You know what? It kind of scared me, too, because I've not been sick in like 4 years or so, because when I working in healthcare is like what I understand being a teacher is like you're sick for 1 year straight. You're just 1 year, you just one sick after another. As soon as your head stops throbbing, you start feeling a tickle in your throat. You're like, God damn it.
Right.
So, but after that, iron immune system, you know, it's to the point where like people will be like, oh, don't get near me. I'm sick. I'm like, I won't get sick. In fact, I kind of like
come here. Let me tongue kiss you.
Well, yeah, I'm like cough in my face because I almost got to the point where I liked collecting antibodies.
Yeah,
you know,
you're going to the immune system gym. You're getting a good workout. Now you're going to be super buff for the next time.
So, you know, a lot of people know this about me. If someone's like, I'm sick, I'm like, that doesn't matter. I'll be fine. So my wife got sick first, and I still had that idiotic thought of, like, I won't get sick, not realizing that ostensibly a husband and wife have the same immune system. You share cooties. Bobby, am I right on that?
No, but so to some extent, the time you've been together and, like, shared germs for that you have. But clearly, most of your life, your immune system is built up without that person, right?
I guess.
And then you have different genetic predispositions to certain things. But regardless of the scientific validity, keep going with your thought process.
Well, either way, it knocked me on my ass, and I'm not used to that, but I forgot something about getting sick, is once you finally give into it, once, like, you're not in denial because, I don't know, you have a show that night, or you have a big thing coming up, or you have a vacation that's about to start with a lot of activity where you're like, I'm not sick. I'm not sick. Once you're finally like, okay, I'm fucking sick, let's give into it, something about it is almost enjoyable. I don't know if I'm alone on that, but once you got the dingy flannel pants on and the old bathrobe and you've tucked yourself in with your hot toddy and your soup and you put on that show that you can easily drift in and out of consciousness to.
Yeah, you turn the living room into your bedroom. You're on the couch with that ratty old blanket.
Yeah. You're just like, you know what? Just give yourself
it. You know what I like, though? I do like the idea of trying to fight being sick, and when you have all that stuff that you want to do, and because it's fun, it's not work, you're like, no, I'm not sick. I'm just going to power through it. I think similar to Jerry Seinfeld's getting coffee with comedians. Comedians in cars getting coffee. Similar to that thing that Seinfeld does, we should have one called comedians with the flu trying to rent jet skis. Just them at the jet ski office. They're disheveled. They're about to pass out. They're completely pale. And they're just like, I just get 1 hour. I think I can do an hour.
I think it'd be a very funny thing to watch. Do a whole series of just filming a comic with the flu that has to go on stage in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like just the whole ritual. Like, oh, yeah, I can do this. Oh, I can do this. It's too horrible. Oh, I can do it. Oh, I got it. No, I can't do it. Yeah, I've done that. I headlined in San Marcos one time with walking pneumonia.
Really?
And instead of a drink, I brought a bottle of DayQuil on stage with me, and I just put it on the stool.
Isn't that great? That horrible sick thing. You know, I didn't get a viral or bacterial infection like you did, but this week I did end up getting food poisoning, and I was in the middle of a meeting with a contractor, and we're sitting out on the property looking like, yeah, I think we want to put the driveway in here, and I get that feeling that my body gives me like a 60-second countdown of, you're going to throw up.
No,
this
really?
This is happening.
What initiates it? Is it like the saliva rising in the back of your throat?
I just feel it.
There's a feeling. I count myself lucky to have this because I've talked to people before who was like, no, I'll just be talking in mid-sentence. I'll start throwing up. So I at least count myself lucky to have the 60-second countdown. But I was talking to this guy, and it was him and his son because it was like a father-son business. And I literally went, I am really sorry about this, but I'm going to have to turn my head and throw up. And then I just started hurling That's in the hilarious. Bushes uncontrollably, which is, by the way, a really hard thing to recover from.
See
in
this
a professional
pile of vomit?
Meeting.
That's yeah. where I want the driveway. Yeah.
In a professional meeting, it's very hard to recover from that, from just like turning your head and retching for a minute and a half.
Dude, I almost never get food poisoning. I've eaten like month-old cheesecake. I've eaten, like when I have leftovers, I leave them out because I don't want them to have to warm them up because they warm up unevenly.
Yeah, so this is your version of the immune system, yeah, Jim. Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe 6-8 months ago, I got food poisoning. And I would throw up. I did it like 6 or 8 times in an 8-hour period. And uh-huh. you can always feel it coming.
Yeah.
And I had a friend of mine who throws up all the time, like super easily. And so the first time I was puking, I felt it coming. I tried to get my phone to record myself throwing up so I could show my friend. But I fumbled with fun. I couldn't get it.
Right in the toilet. You know, the one thing that would really trigger the most angry reaction you could get out of me is when you'd be working a day job and you're clearly sick in front of your boss and he or she just clearly doesn't care.
Oh, yeah.
Or is trying to ignore it, you know? Yeah. We've all had that boss where you could get into a very serious car accident and text them a picture of you with a full body cast. They'd be like, but you're still coming in, right? Yeah. So this one time I was clearly ill in front of my boss and she was clearly ignoring it. And finally, mid-sentence, I grabbed a small trash can, hurled into it in front of her, put it back down, looked at her, waiting obviously for her to say, oh man, go home. But she's like, anyway, so
now you got that out of your system. Yeah, you're good to go, right?
Good.
Stay late.
And I just fucking lost her. I'm like, oh, fuck you, fuck you. What is it worth? So anyway, I didn't have that job anymore.
That's amazing.
I had a boss one time who similar thing, only instead of getting sick, we were being swarmed and stung by bees. And we were like, oh man, we got to get out of here. And he's like, no.
Walk it off, pansy.
No, we still have more recording to do. We spent the rest of the day recording a site while literally no less than 50 bees were on us at any given time, just going like, ah, every time they stung us. Similar type thing.
Worse, yeah. You win, fine. And that's what's important, is that body.
Right. That's
you
right.
have a better fucking story.
But you got to imagine that the boss who demands you stay there in extreme situations, in both of those ones, in the sick one and in the bees one, you're fucking yourself over too, man. Like, in the case of, hey, let's have the sick person around me for an extra amount of time that I will likely get sick too. Or, hey, there's a bunch of bees crawling over me as well. You wonder if the person in their head doesn't just go, hey, it's just a fucking job.
Yeah.
Maybe your boss was working on his bee immunity. Everything yeah. that. Maybe he was trying to build up his tolerance.
Meanwhile, he's on a podcast right now bragging, like, I get stung all the time.
So had a incident that I haven't had happen to me in a very long time, and this is possibly the worst case it's ever been. So I've talked about it before. Just for fun, me and my friends started a little tribute band to the Misfits. It's a little hobby we do. It's just for kicks, you know? We booked a gig at the House of Blues in San Diego.
Great venue.
Yeah. Let me preface this. It has been a very long time since I've had to put up with a scammer bringer promoter that's also a megalomaniac, you know?
They seem to go together, those two.
Yes, they do. They do. I don't know what it is. Like, here's the thing. When you start any type of entertainment, like whether it be music or comedy, you're going to have to deal with these people kind of a lot for about 1 to 2 years, where they just overbook shows, makes you bring an ungodly amount of people, and also something about it turns them into Donald Trump. They just think there's some sort of entertainment mogul because they're allowed to book a Tuesday night at the Comedy Store or something. Right. Like, I run the best shows in California. All celebrities know me. These people love me. I work with these people. No one runs shows better than me. So you have to deal with them a lot. Now,
just to set the scene, we were all excited. Like, we found out your band was going to be there with a few other cover bands, some of their friends of yours, but it was going to be a great show. We're all like, fuck yeah, we're going to go see them at the House of Blues, see a couple of the bands, it's going to be great.
Yeah, no, and we were psyched too. Now, other guys in this little hobby band of mine, they were really excited, and I want to point that out because when I tell you this story, there's going to be a few times when you're going to say, why didn't you just tell her to fuck off right there? And the reason being is, my friends were looking forward to this too. Right. So anyways, we get an offer to play the House of Blues. And by the way, the reason I'm not used to this anymore is because fortunately I'm in a position where this type of promoter will look me up online and be like, oh, this bullshit probably won't work on this guy. So they move on. But once in a while, like once every twice a year, I'll get that message like, hey, buddy, I just saw your clip on YouTube. Really, which one? And I'm thinking that you could play my industry showcase at the world famous Improv. And all you have to do is sell 20 tickets.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, if you sell less than 15, you can't go on stage.
Yeah.
And then I can get to laugh at those people and go, yeah, that's great. Fuck off.
No, what you should do is like drag them along a little bit. You should be like, oh, really? Tell me more. And then just let them spend a lot of time typing on a keyboard. Okay, well, let's meet up and discuss it. And then just not show up. Just fuck with them as much as they literally fuck with everybody.
No, that won't work because they overbook these shows. That's the thing, is when you're new to comedy or music or whatever, you go, wow, I'm playing this great venue. It's going to be amazing.
No, no, no. I'm not saying do it. I'm just saying waste their time.
I know, but it won't matter because they overbook it. If you don't show up, they've still got 29 other comics.
Oh, I'm not saying show up to the show. I'm saying I want to meet with you at a coffee shop and discuss the possibility of me doing this. Just try and waste as much of their time as humanly possible.
All right, great. That's a great plan. It'll work every time. Fortunately, I'm in a spot where I don't have to deal with that anymore. So anyways, I forgot all these people even existed. So when I got the call to play the House of Blues, I didn't think, oh, this is probably a fucking bringer scam promoter who's running a fucking Thursday night show.
Right.
And what will happen when you get to these things, as like a comic at least, is you'll get there and realize, oh, it's fucking, there's 29 people on the bill.
Right.
We're all going up for 3 minutes. It's bad for everyone involved. Anyways, we get the call to play the House of Blues, and things just got worse from there. First, we find out like there's five other bands on the bill. So I'm like, well, how long is
this
show?
Kind of a long show, yeah.
6 fucking hours. The last time I went to a 6-hour show, it was called Ozfest, and I thought it was a bit much. So secondly,
can you just imagine the thought process of somebody's like, you know what's good time for comedy? About 45 minutes to an hour and a half. You know what would be, I don't know, like 4 times better? Let's just do 6 hours.
That's because they don't think that way. They just think, I've got all these comics booked. I'm making this much money from all of them.
Right.
Can I add a few more, make a little more money?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Let me add some more comics.
Yeah, yeah. And they never stop to think, like, and here's the real flaw with this, is that they're always scrambling before the show. Like, everyone bring people. You got to bring people. You got to bring 10 people. Whereas if you just ran a good show, people would come back on their own.
Right.
But instead, they just treat people like Duraflame logs. Like, yep.
6 hours is a little bit, I think, more tolerable for music, but still, if you were to go to that, so let's say your favorite band was there, and they did an hour set, which is a pretty decent length of time. That would mean you would have to sit through 5 other not your favorite bands doing an hour set.
No, it's like you said, it's like going to a festival.
It'd be crazy.
So anyways, you know, at first I was like, five bands, I'm like, 6 hours, I'm like, isn't that a bit much? She's like, She starts pulling the Donald Trump thing. This is a formula that has worked for years.
Oh, Jesus.
I am one of the greatest promoters in all of music history. You don't understand. I am a mogul. I'm like,
it's worked so well that I've never heard of a 6-hour show at House of Blues before. That's how well it works.
I'm like, if it works so well, why are you worried about how many people we'll each bring? Right. Anyways, so then we find out we're going on at 11:30 at night. On a Thursday. So that's bad. Right then, I'm begging my band, like, let's pull out of this.
A lot of your
garbage.
Friends who are going to come to the show are like, they have day jobs. They have morning jobs. Some have kids.
Some have kids, and that requires a sitter, you know?
Right.
But then here comes the kicker. So then we get pushed back again. Now we're on at midnight. Now our set's shortened to like 30 minutes. Wow. Then this was the kicker. First, we are required to bring 150 people.
Just your band.
Just us.
Yeah.
And we don't get paid a dime if it's one under 150. So if we bring 140 people, she goes,
you're so close, man.
So close.
I'll tell you what. I'll get you on the next show. I know you can make it.
Yep.
Here's my question to that person. If I could bring reliably to the point where I was going to do this, 150 people, what the fuck do I need you for?
I
could go to any venue in this town and book a show, and they would not only give me 100% of the door, they'd give me a percentage of the bar if I bought 150
people. This person, not even just this person specifically, but this type of person, this promoter, they're just a useless middleman.
Yeah.
They're entirely
completely useless. So anyways, 150, and that number, I suspect, is designed to not hit, so that you try and hit it,
yeah, right.
Bring 90, and they go, well, those are all my sales.
Yeah.
Those go 100% in my pocket, but then here comes the kicker. This I've never heard of before in all my travels, is that the show starts at 6, we go on at midnight. In the contract, we were to, under no circumstances, tell people when we go on.
So that they show up at 6, thinking they're going
to
see you.
They want everyone of our people, ostensibly 150 people, to show up at 6 and then have no idea that we weren't going on until midnight, and then that would only be for 30 minutes.
So not only, by the way, now you've gotten bumped to starting at midnight, going to 30 minutes, somebody would have to be there, you know, till like 12:30, 12:45 to actually see you guys. If they show up at 6, essentially what you're saying to your friends is, hey, how would you like to put in a standard work day here at House of Blues?
Yes, exactly.
Right, and we're just supposed to burn them. We're supposed to be like, don't tell them when you're going on. You're not allowed to post it. You're not. And you know what? I would have almost been okay if I got to say, here's the set times for everyone.
Right.
So maybe someone can like have their mom come over and watch the kid and go to sleep there and show up at around 11:30. No, they wanted to burn people.
Right.
Yeah. And so to the point where they never come to one of our shows again.
Yeah, right.
Like, I wouldn't. I'd be like, dude, last time I went to go see them, they didn't tell us they weren't going on until 6 hours later.
Now, not only that, but I had also heard from one of your bandmates that now Ryan, we all know Ryan is a successful comic. He's built a brand. He's built a following. His Facebook profile picture has been his logo for as long as I've known him. I had heard that she was trying to micromanage not just the band page, but your personal page, saying you have to change your profile pic
right
to the flyer for this fucking show.
You have to change it, and it has to say my name. It has to say Kelly So-and-so presents. I'm like, this is not my job. Tribute band isn't my life. I'm a comic.
Right.
I don't. This is a separate deal. I don't change that for anybody. Like, you have to, otherwise your band is cut. Again, now I have to think about 4 other fucking people.
Is this a person who is actually employed by House of Blues, or is this
no?
Oh God, no.
No, she's an independent contractor. But by the way, they will always side with someone like this, because then they don't have to do any work.
Right,
sure,
exactly.
Sure. But it's just a crazy attitude to have. It'd be one thing if you had some kind of exclusive in. You're like, I'm the official booker of the House of Blues.
Right.
It's still disgusting, but at least you have a basis by which to say I have some kind of exclusivity I'm offering. You're just an independent contractor. You're just somebody coming in and saying, I can put a show on here. Anybody can do that.
So this is this person that's like, I have this foolproof formula to run the best shows ever in Southern California. I overbooked the show with 5 to 6 bands. I let them play for 30 minutes. They all bring 150. I keep all the money. I'm a genius. No! You saying that you're a genius promoter for doing that is like stealing people's wallets and going, I am the greatest earner. I have the secret to success. It's stealing.
Now, I'm a little bit on Bobby's side as far as fucking with people. I know it probably wouldn't be worth it in the situation, but like my first reaction is like, I would be like, oh, you only want to bring 150? Because I was going to bring 400, but I'll just bring 150. I was like, kind of string her along on that one. And then I'd be like, well, if there's 5 bands, bring 150 each. That seems like it might be kind of a fire hazard. Maybe we shouldn't, like, I would just want to fuck with her a little bit. Just
I would
to
too.
See if
In
I
fact,
could.
I'm making a suggestion, Ryan. You let me know if we can do this. Let's form a fake band called the Degenerate Band. Let's apply to her to be on the show that the Fiends just dropped out of and string her along as if we are going to do this the entire time, just to see how much time we can waste at first. We'll claim we have a 200, we're going to bring 200 people no matter what, but we need to have a pre-meeting with her to make sure everything is on the up and up. We'll just not show up to a bunch of that kind of stuff. Let's see how much we could fuck with this person.
Here's the thing that really bothered me is because I had to worry about 4 other people that really wanted to do this show at first, is that I had to listen to her feed me all those lines that we at this table have all heard from scammer promoters when we first started. This is how this business works.
Right.
First of all, I don't like a failed actress telling me how the biz works like she'd fucking know.
One of the executive producers for Conan's going to be there.
Yeah, she's like, this is a launching pad. And I had to like smile and just nod like I don't know she's lying. That was the worst part for me, is having to swallow this bullshit that I know to be false.
Right.
So anyways, I finally had too much. I told the guys, I understand if you hate me, but there's no way I'm... Like, this is just endurance at this point. Like, yeah, we've cut your time. You'll get no pay. You go on at midnight for no people. You have to burn all your friends. I'm like, Is she trying to get us to drop out? This is the worst conditions I've ever heard.
And you just know that, say you agreed to all these bullshit conditions, you just know that if you went there and waited for your spot, things would run long. It would get to the end of the night, and she'd be like, sorry, man, we don't have time for you.
Yeah, no, yeah, that would
100% happen.
Sure, yeah. And by the way, then you'd also hear like, man, only 149? I really thought you guys could... You know, you really, I heard good things about you. Then you, you know, you let me down like this.
Or even worse, you would get out like 160 people, but you would get cut for time. Like, sorry, man, didn't have time to put you on. Bummer, too, because you would have made money. But unfortunately, yeah, you didn't perform. You don't get any of that money.
And so then, by the way, leading up to the show, I'm required to check in with her and the other bands every single day to report our promotional efforts. Everyone check in once a day. Let me know what you did today to promote the show. I'm like, are you fucking out of your mind? And then, oh, and they put me on a group text with the other bands. And these guys are, some of them are nice guys, I'm sure, naive as fuck. People were like, hey, I left a stack of tickets at Guitar Center. Everyone's gonna come. I'm like, right, and I started fucking with them. Like, I scattered all my tickets in front of on the sidewalk. Dude, can you imagine who's gonna pick those up? Maybe people in high places. And like, people are like, way to go, Ryan. I'm like, you fucking moron.
Dude, I mailed some to some of my favorite bands. Hopefully they'll show up. Come on, Coldplay.
Dude, you remember the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, how he'd shove money in people's mouths? Dude, I did that to a random guy on the street with the tickets. He's coming.
This is what makes people say, what is a promoter's job then?
Yeah.
Because an actual promoter is a good person to have. But there's so many bullshit promoters that it makes, like, what are you actually doing? You're not doing anything.
And so, finally, I'm like, you know what? And I tried to be as diplomatic as possible. I said, you know what? We can't agree to these terms that are ever worsening anymore. I'm sorry. Take us off the bill immediately. We're not going to be there. She loses her fucking mind on me. She starts flipping out and doing all the stuff that a megalomaniacal person would do. You'll never work in this town again. I have contacts. Oh, you're finished. You'll never work in comedy or music again. Wow. I know everybody. I am the Hollywood Improv. I'm the building.
Wow. Just, I feel like she's doing like Wizard of Oz, and she's like, also, don't look behind this screen.
I feel like this is as good a time as any, Bobby, for us to tell Ryan, unfortunately, you're being replaced as the co-host by Kelly. She's taking this podcast over. You're out.
It's so funny to me when people claim they have a way to ruin your career. Like, there's probably 8 people in Hollywood that have the keys to ruin someone's career. Like, Dave, you work at the Madhouse Comedy Club.
Right.
If, let's say, Chris Rock called and say, hey, don't let this guy ever perform at your club. He'd be like, all right, I'm never going to, okay, fine. And then probably forget that name.
Right.
But it's funny that, you know, I remember being that gullible to when people would say like, hey, eat all my shit to be on this show and it'll be a launching pad. Do you remember being that gullible?
Well, for comedy, sure. You just got to go back to when you started and you would be like, oh, man. The guy from Conan's going to be there. We got to do it.
Way too many comics that never get out of that gullibility phase.
Right, right.
It's
yeah.
Sad.
It just depends, too, on how quickly you learn is going to be a mixture of, A, how many times you get burned. The first few times you get burned, you're all of a sudden a lot less likely to do that again. B, how able you are to admit that you did something stupid. Because there are people, like you said, who will still be in that phase 5 years in because they were too, they're too, like, proud to admit, oh, I got scammed back then. Like,
yeah.
There's some people that this actually works for. There's those comics who, like, they'll have 10 or 12 friends who will come to see them anytime they perform.
True.
They're not very good comics. I don't know why their friends always come out for them.
Because it's rare. Because they can do it 3 times a year, get those people out. It's like their fun thing that they all their friends go out and do. And 10 to 12 people isn't that hard to do. So you're right. I guess for some people, it like makes sense. For everybody else who was comfortable actually doing it and going to open mics and getting booked on shows based on talent as opposed to how many, you know, tickets you buy from a promoter and pretend to sell.
Right.
It's just a huge hole. I could see like, you know, that gives you an advantage. It means that if you're young and up and coming and you can't otherwise be in front of a real audience because you don't have the chops for that yet, it is a good way to get an audience there and do it. You're paying for it. You're paying whatever the 70, 80 bucks out of your pocket to do it. But it's like, I guess it's good for that. But maybe do that 3 or 4 times and then just call that a night and never do that again.
Yeah.
Ryan, what's your best gullible story?
there was a woman I worked with back in 2010 in this office, and she was recently divorced, and she was new to online dating, which back in 2010 was in its infancy. It was like,
everybody here has Ferraris.
I love where this is going.
Well, so the thing is, though, she was not only new to online dating, but it seemed like she was just new to being online, just in general, because she would come into work, and she was a good-looking older lady. She was like in her mid-40s, I think, and she would come in with this smug look on her face, and she'd be like, guess who? I met online, and I'm kind of dating right now.
He's a prince from Kenya.
He's a prince, yep.
No. The bass player from Godsmack. I'm like, what? And she's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, we've been talking, and we're kind of in a thing right now. I'm like, I have a few questions, but no, you know what? I don't need to ask them. You're not talking to the bass player of Godsmack. You're not. No, I am. She'd say this, like, I asked him what his name was, when he was born, where he's from, and I looked it up, and he was right. He knew all the answers. I'm like,
I love the cognitive dissonance of not thinking like he might also have
access to Google. I'm like, oh my God, she doesn't know how Google works. And so the thing was, you'd see the trajectory of this, like, oh, guess what? He said we're gonna go to Hawaii when he gets off tour. I'm like, did you check that band is actually on a tour right now? And she'd say this, like, why would I need to check? The bass player just told me he was. I'm like, right. And then like a month later, she'd be like, I don't think this guy's actually the bass player for Godsmack. I'm like, I am so happy you're not 14 years old, because you would get taken. There's no doubt in my mind you would be in that van. So, but the thing is, then a month after that, guess who I met online, and I'm kind of dating?
The lead guitarist for Godsmack.
She'd be like, the drummer from the Black Veil Brides. So I'm like, I wonder if it's the same guy. I just wonder if it's the same. Maybe it's her ex-husband just fucking with her.
I do like that these guys have some kind of hint of subtlety where they're like, I'm the lead singer to... No. Bass player.
Yeah.
Not give me the star.
Yeah. I'm like,
this is more believable.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that went on forever. So
Jesus. I had a roommate a few years back who was moving out of the country, and she had to get rid of all her shit. And so I come home one day, and she was like, you know, a little bit, she was in her 30s at the time, like 10 years younger than me. And so I come home, and she's all excited because she was telling me about she's going to sell this coffee table that she listed on Craigslist. The person's sending someone to pick it up with a $2,000 cashier's check. And she just has to cash
coffee.
It, give $2,000 back to the guy, but she gets to keep $500 of it.
Of course, yeah.
I just shook my head and walked away. I'm like, I can't even explain this to you.
Really? So you just let her get scammed?
Well, I ended up not going through, but I was just
I'm going to admit to you right now, I almost fell for a similar scam when I was like 21.
Right.
And so because it did sound too good to be true, I was looking for jobs, and there's the famous check cashing scam that young guys fall for, which is... The explanation is so ludicrous. They're like, we're making so much money that we can't keep up and cash all these checks.
Yeah.
So we need the people to cash these checks for us. And so we'll send you a check for $2,000. You keep $500 and wire us the cash. I'm like, man, these guys can't fucking bring all these checks to the bank. I'm like, okay, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. This seems too good to be true. There's no job out there where you just cash a check and get to keep some of it.
Well, he is pretty busy. He plays bass for Godsmack.
But, but I'm like, but wait a minute. It's their check. It's not, you know, I'm like, it's from their account. How could this possibly be a scam if they're sending me the check? So first I took it to my bank. Luckily, my bank was astute enough to be like, we need to put a hold on this because, I mean... Ryan, you live on $100 a week according to your records, and now you want us to clear a $2,000 check.
Right.
We're going to need like a full 5 days. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I take the check. I'm like, all right, so it's a Wells Fargo check. I'm going to take it directly to the Wells Fargo. It's their check. They have to cash it.
Right.
And then I'll be golden. So I go and I hand it to the banker. I'm like, here you go. He's like,
This account's been marked for fraud.
This account's closed. I'm like, damn, well, that's impossible. I'm supposed to cash this. And he's like, did you hear about this on the internet, son? And I just like bow my head like, yes. He's like, okay, let me explain to you about the internet. And this fucking guy who's only 5 years older than I am is like, you see, they want you to take it to your bank. They'll cash it for you. And then days later, they say, oh, by the way, that didn't go through. You owe us $2,000.
Yeah. I'm like, it'd be great if he just started treating Ryan too like he was just an infirmed child. And he was like, also, when you go to the bathroom, make sure you wash your hands when you get out.
No, no, he did treat me like that. And rightfully so. Because I almost fell for a scam where I thought people were just giving away free money because they didn't have time to go to the bank.
You know, Bobby and I have the same mentality about all these things. So a couple years back when I was looking for an apartment, I stumble into the apartment renting scam.
Yep.
Where they'll put up just pictures of any old apartment.
Right.
And with an actual apartment for rent somewhere in a neighborhood somewhere. Yep. And they'll be like, oh, it's we're renting it for really cheap because they're always like ministers in Africa. They're always like on mission working in Africa.
Or they're
always
out of town somehow, which is why they can't show you the
apartment.
Well,
we'll send you the keys. Just wire us the money. Yep. And you go and look at the place, and it's a great place, and the price is amazing. So I searched them like, oh, it's a scam. I found out it was a scam. But then I decided to string these people along. So I was just like, I would speak like in broken English to them through email, and I ended up asking them for a picture of them. So, and they sent me a picture of some old white couple. So I sent a picture of me. I kept Googling pictures of Adam Levine from Maroon 5, finding him in non-concert settings and sending pictures to them being like, this is me with my girlfriend. This is me at Halloween. This is me at a party. This went on for 10 days, like 18 emails.
On the other side is the girl I used to work with, like, I can't believe I'm talking to Adam Levine. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to fucking smugly tell everyone at work.
You should have made every email start off with an Adam Levine lyric. You should have just subtly worked it into the conversation. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, the gullibility thing is interesting because you almost feel sorry for the people who are super gullible, but also I want to scream at them like, stop being gullible because you're allowing these other parasites to live in our society. Like, yeah. I know it's not all your fault, but we need you to kind of wise up because you're allowing this industry to flourish. I'll tell you the one that I got super surprised at that I saw on TV. Like, on regular TV, there was a commercial that came up.
Soapy Joe's?
For Miracle Spring Water. And it is a crazed preacher who is saying, I'm going to send you this packet of Miracle Spring Water. And it's literally like the disposable packets of lube you'll pick up at Pride. Like, it's one of those filled with tap water that they claim is Miracle Spring Water. But here's the thing.
He's keeping all the Miracle Spring Water for himself?
Yeah, right. If he
dives into it like Scrooge McDuck.
They show all these testimonials. And if the testimonials had been like, man, I was really sick and I took the Miracle Spring Water and I got better. It's still dumb and stupid and whatever, but it's, to some extent, it makes sense. All right, it's some kind of magical healing medicine. That is not what this is. Every single testimonial was the same. I took the Miracle Spring Water, and the next day, $75,000 check in the mail. And I was like, how does that work? What is this mechanism of action? Every single one was all about these people getting money somehow related to them drinking this prepackaged tap water.
That's fucking hilarious.
And I watched it, and he's like, I'm going to send you this Miracle Spring Water for free, which means you know somebody's paying shipping and handling, or they're just trying to get an email list or something. Like, they're like, who's the gullible people we can email later on? I know, the people who got the free Miracle Spring Water.
Oh, Jesus.
But then you got to think of all those poor people who like end up working as a grocery cashier for, I don't know, like 30 years, and they have this life savings that they end up blowing on complete and total bullshit because some scam artist figured out like the right magic words to say to them.
Yeah.
It half makes me want to start becoming a crazy scam artist, and half makes me want to become a Punisher like vigilante who hunts them down.
That's the worst, though, isn't it? You ever been just at a Walmart and the lady checking you out is like 79 years old?
Right.
And clearly, I mean, sometimes seniors go get a job because they need a purpose. They retired. Yeah. They're fine. They just want somewhere to go. But this lady's clearly miserable. She's clearly not there because she wants to be.
Right.
And I'm like, I want to be like, what happened? Can I help? Do you have like a son on drugs that's like ruining your life? Because that's what it
seems
like.
I'm gonna get
you
some Miracle Spring Water.
Yeah. Well, that's who I think might be. These people are like, this is my last hope, and they drink that shit. Kind of tastes like baby powder, and then they're like, well, back to work.
And the Walmart one is even harder to understand. If you see the person at Starbucks that's super old, you're like, all right, maybe they had something weird and they needed health insurance. But you're like, Walmart's not giving you health insurance.
No.
Now, this is a weird one about gullibility. I don't know if you guys have ever heard this because I'm older than you. Bobby, you might have known this one. I remember as a kid being taught in public school that there's only like two man-made structures you can see from space, one being the Great Wall of China.
It's total bullshit.
No, I know. But as I was super gullible as a kid. But I remember as a kid hearing that being like, there's no way that's true. You right. could see super highways if that was the case.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, it was like accepted fact at that time. Like people just accept it. I'm like, I guess I'm wrong. I'm the only one that thinks this is bullshit. Okay, I guess I'm the wrong one. It comes out decades later, like the guy on his deathbed admitted he lied. I'm like, well, obviously.
Yeah. It was before the internet where you could check things easily. People
but also,
got away
you just fucking think about it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a wall.
Yeah, I know. I used to think the same things. I was like, the I-8 is much wider.
Exactly.
than that.
I just can't believe the entire world was that stupid about that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the ones that I really like. It's not the Miracle Spring Water. It's not the Nigerian.
He's about to sell us something,
scams.
Ryan.
No. I love the Bullshido guys. I love the guys with the fake martial arts.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the self-taught martial arts?
Yeah, or the ones where a guy took some kind of obscure form of kung fu or something, and then he teaches energy shots, and like he basically has a Hadouken that he shoots at his students.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And they are not faking, by the way. This is actually
it's like a psychosomatic.
It is. It's basically a psychosomatic thing where you believe that this person has power, and then because you believe it so strongly, when they pretend to shoot their energy ball at you, and you by the way, you've seen other people who got hit by their energy ball and they fell down. And so it's kind of what's expected.
It's like
a
mass hysteria.
It basically is. And my favorite thing on earth is watching them do a thing where they give like a 10-minute explanation about their magic energy powers. They demonstrate it with all their students. And then they bring somebody in who doesn't buy the bullshit. And there's a great one of this guy on like the beach. I think it's actually a woman on the beach. She's like the grandmaster or something. And they have like Hadouken balls.
Woman grandmaster. I know you're full of shit right
there. Yeah, right? And people are running at her, and she does the Hadouken 2 or 3 times, and they would just fall and crumble. And there's one guy who's like, "All right, let's do it." And he's just running at her, and she does it, and he just lays her out.
Oh,
and he smashes into her at a full run. He doesn't hit her; he just like runs into her and just just demolishes her with a full run.
Now, you probably see, if you're a fan of this, you've probably seen this video. There was a guy, like an older white guy with glasses. He was a grandmaster, whatever, and he brought some non-believer in, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So talking to him after, he's like, "Well, if he lifts his big toe on his right foot while
or
I do it, that could counteract
puts
it.
Puts his tongue on the roof of his mouth. Yeah.
Right.
There's always some bullshit.
Did you have a penny under your tongue? You had a penny under your tongue.
You would want to look at all the students and be like, why didn't y'all raise your big toe?
Right. Yeah. Or
you know the defense.
Or how about this? Hey, everybody who wants to beat the shit out of this guy.
Yeah.
Big toe up in the air.
Toes up, everybody.
Yeah. Toes up. Let's fight.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah, I love
it. You see this guy just covered in blood and bruises. Like, the toes. My God, the toes.
Well, I love it because I took Hapkido, which has Aikido in it, after already kind of being exposed to some martial arts, including Western martial arts, which are much more practical things like boxing and wrestling and stuff. And I had taken it, and some Aikido is super useful. Like some of the wrist locks, especially if you're on the ground, you can use those wrist locks really effectively. But some of it is basically like you responding to what that teacher wants you to do.
No, at a university in Michigan, I took Aikido for a semester because I had just seen a bunch of Steven Seagal movies. I'm like, that looks badass. Yeah. I'm going to do this. And I learned, I'm like, what they're teaching, the way, like the low level, it's basically a dance.
Yes.
Like you have to react in a certain way when your partner does something. I'm like, this is bullshit.
Did I ever tell you about that professor when I was in San Diego State? This dude taught stage combat because I was a theater major, right? And one day he comes in his Aikido gi. I don't know if you've ever seen an Aikido gi, but it kind of looks like something that a very flamboyant man would wear to the disco in the 70s. It's got the big parachute pants. It doesn't look like a karate gi. Anyways, he comes in, and already I'm like, oh, shit, what's going to happen? He's like, so part of what I do when I teach this class is tell you that I am a master of Aikido. I'm like, and so he goes, I need a volunteer. And he puts his arm straight. He goes, someone come up and try to bend my arm. So my hand went right the fuck up. So I went up.
Were you in combat sports at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. At the time, I was a blue belt in jiu-jitsu.
Okay, all right.
And like, I was already amateur fighting, so I'm like, right here. So I go up, and I put him in an Americana. His arm bends immediately. Right. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Just use one hand. Yeah. I'm like, all right. He's like, and do it from this angle.
Right, yeah.
I'm like, then I go.
And don't raise your big toe.
And and then, of course, when I followed all of his parameters, wow, I can't bend that arm at all. He's like, see?
Well, see,
I'm also dating the bass player from Godsmack, by the way.
Well, and the thing with like, especially like Aikido, which for those of you guys who don't know, a lot of wrist locks and stuff. It is, like I said, useful in certain grappling situations. But the problem is when they do their demonstrations, they're having people throw punches and stuff. And they're like, this is how you defend. No, you can't use that. You're not going to take somebody's punch, who's especially one throwing properly, and do it. And so one of the funny things we did is we had an Aikido master, so to speak, come, like a 30-year-old white dude who had way too long hair. And like, you know, he had that look of the 30-year-old. horrible idea.
I feel like Aikido masters are always white dudes. What's that all about?
Really is. And so they had him come up, and he was saying how nobody could punch him. Like, nobody could hit him. And that was his claim. Nobody, he said, I've been doing
this. And then someone punched him. No, you're not allowed to. That's what I meant. You can't punch me.
He's like, I've been doing this for 25 years. I've never had a single person strike me. And like, same exact thing that Ryan did.
I leave my house very little.
Yeah. The guy raised his hand. The guy's like, all right, come on and show and come up. And at that point, I think I was a senior at the time. At that point, I'd been doing nothing but boxing with killers for 3 years every day. And I was like, I got a great jab. Let's see this.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you snap him with a jab?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So he gets up and he goes.
Gloves or no gloves?
No gloves. But he goes, okay, punch me in the, he's like, punch me in the chest. And I was the third person up. And the first two people, he goes, punch me in the chest. And the people do like this.
Do they wind up?
Really, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. And my favorite part is he goes, punch me in the chest, and everybody would draw their hand back just like you would normally for a punch, and he'd go, no, the other hand, because he knew most people were right-handed, so get them with their left hand. They're gonna be slower and more uncoordinated, and so they did it. And the entire time I'm thinking, ooh, my jab, yeah. And they get me up, and he goes, all right, now punch me in the chest, and as he's saying chest, punch the shit out of him in the sternum.
And he's like, come on, man, that's how Houdini dies.
For the rest of my life, I wish I would have said. Once in a few decades isn't bad either, I guess.
No, what did he say, though?
He goes, no. We have to reset to be ready. We have to reset.
But if you hit him in the solar plexus, did he have to catch his breath first?
No, it was just a quick jab. I wasn't trying to hurt him. But I was like, he's like, we have to reset first. I was like, all right. And I was like, way too eager.
As he said, set. Yeah.
I'm super excited. I was like, all right, let's do it. And he goes, well, we'll do it
after class. It's time for lunch.
No, essentially, his excuse was, we'll do it after class. We have to give everybody else a chance. And there was nobody left to do. Like, he had asked for volunteers, three people came up, I was the third. Nobody left.
The dude yells pocket sand, throws some sand in Bobby's eyes, like, all right, now hit me, smart ass.
Yeah, well, his whole move, which was so, by the way, don't ever do this, his whole like move is, all right, I'm gonna get him to throw with their uncoordinated hands, and I'm gonna do a step to the side and like kind of palm strike their wrist as they come by. That works if somebody is either drunk or has never thrown a punch before. But the second you're throwing a punch in the proper fashion, there's no time to palm strike somebody's hand. What, are you going to grab a bullet out of the air?
Yeah. Now, wait a second. We've been talking about combat sports. Bobby showed me something interesting recently. Ronda Rousey has a new commercial out.
Oh, my gosh. But this is crazy because this first got me mad at the Twizzlers Corporation and then instead has gotten me mad at WWE.
Bobby was so upset that I got a text at like 10:45 at night. Like, have you seen Ronda Rousey's Twizzler commercial? I'm like,
I love that he's mad at Twizzlers.
I am, and here's why. And by the way, Twizzlers,
like,
I owe you an apology.
Woke me up. What?
Okay, so here's what it is. Ronda Rousey has a Twizzler commercial where it's like showing Ronda Rousey super pissed off, and it's like, even the angry Ronda Rousey loves Twizzlers, and it's whatever it is. What?
And they tickle her
like
face.
She breaks to a Twizzler, like she laughs and smiles.
But they show her
it.
Grab the Twizzler and eat it. And as I'm watching this, you look at it, and she is wearing gloves, but they're shaped like MMA gloves, but they're not MMA gloves. They look like somebody has taken like a lady's dress glove for evening ball wear and cut it into the shape of an MMA glove.
Right.
Yeah, they look like gloves you'd wear to a club or something.
Yes, yeah. Weird. And it angered me immediately because I was like, hey, Twizzler, first of all, you hire Ronda Rousey. You pay her prime money. Why? Because she's a star in MMA. You're appealing to an MMA crowd. Why would you purposely choose something that every person in MMA would go like, that's not the gloves they wear. What are you doing? And I brought this up. And actually, both of you guys, independently of each other, came up with the solution.
Yeah, when Bobby was...
Ryan, I just high-fived over there.
When Bobby was busy harassing me at my home at 10:45 at night...
I sent some letters out to the Twizzler Corporation that I can't take back.
I was like, I'm like, no, I've not seen the Ronda Rousey Twizzler commercial.
He made me watch it, and I didn't notice.
Yeah. Right.
I was like, no, didn't you see?
No, I was like, I was sleeping, by the way. So he's like, go on YouTube right now. And I'm like, my wife is like, what are you doing? I'm like, trust me, he's not going to let it go. And so I watch this. I see the gloves he's talking about. I'm like, I think that's her new WWE costume.
Yeah. I told him, like, they're not appealing to MMA. She's not in MMA anymore. They're appealing to WWE.
Well, so now I go on down the rabbit hole and start looking up her WWE costume. And indeed, you guys are correct. And I'm sorry, Twizzlers. I didn't mean that about your families. They're all safe. Don't worry. But I went and looked it up, and I was like, now I'm angry at WWE. Because why do this? What is your end game? The whole point of gloves is to protect your hands. Some people think they're to protect the other person's face. They're not. They're to protect your hands so you don't break them when you throw punches.
Unless you're in the WWE, then they're to look cool.
These gloves do nothing to protect your hands. In fact, they inhibit your ability to punch because it's very easy to Aikido grab somebody's hand when they're wearing this type of weird hand glove.
How upset Bobby is over this.
This is such a detriment. Like, you are crippling yourself going
Ryan,
into the ring by wearing
these.
Have
you ever seen him this fired up over anything?
What is the purpose of these gloves? They do nothing but inhibit your ability to do the thing you're supposed to be dressed up to do.
Let me add a little wrinkle, Bobby, is Ronda Rousey is the third MMA star to transition to WWE, or vice versa, to be in both.
Brock
first one being Ken Shamrock. Yeah. The other one being Brock Lesnar. They were both allowed to wear actual MMA gloves. You know that? they didn't get special
Why?
Ones. This one, yeah, you got
Way
it.
Way to go, Ryan. New batch of letters going out now.
Why?
Thanks for that.
Why did this happen? I was telling Ryan before, it's the equivalent of the super lifted truck, the truck with like the 4-foot lift on it that's super high in the air. Originally, guys started lifting their trucks so they could go off-roading better. They'd have better ground clearance. The problem is once you get past about 4 to 6 inches, depending on the vehicle, you actually raise the center of gravity so high in that truck that now it's bad at off-roading, and it's much worse than if you had just left it stock. So like they had this thing for a while where people were lifting their trucks so they could go off-road more, and then somebody's like, you know what? My dick's super small. How do I make other people not think that? I'll put my truck 8 feet in the air, and then I'll be cool. So they took something that was designed for a function, then became a style, and over-stylized it to the point where the function no longer worked. That's the exact same thing with these gloves. They
Function
look like
totally
MMA
works.
Gloves.
They drive over cars now with Superdomes all around the country.
Yeah, it's funny. Like we would have people on job sites show up, like outdoor construction sites, with a truck that's lifted like a foot in the air, and they'd be like, sorry, this is unsafe. You get put in the same category as a Honda Civic. You're a non-off-road vehicle at that point.
You know what's funny is sometimes, speaking of lifted trucks, people don't realize that the size of a car is not representative of who is inside of it.
Right.
There was a very funny moment where, this is about 4 months ago, this guy in a lifted truck got some road rage at me, and we were both honking and flipping each other off.
Turned out to be Rampage Jackson.
Yeah. We got to a light, and this guy's in a big lifted truck. It's got those balls on the back. Yeah,
of course
it does.
Yeah.
It's got the Blue Lives Matter sign on it. Right. And this dude opens his door at the traffic light, jumps down from his truck. Keep in mind, I'm in a red Chevy Cruze that I bought with the intention of passing it on to my stepdaughter. So then I get out, and then all of a sudden he realizes, oh, that guy's a lot bigger than me. This is not how I thought this would go.
Then he gets the rope ladder down and climbs back up into the truck.
But I can clearly see it.
Try to bend my arm.
He said, I am the bass player of Godsmack. You show me respect.
Haven't been punched in 20 years.
But yeah, you could see how this went in his mind. He's like, big truck, red Chevy Cruze, I'm clearly bigger. All right, let's call the week. I'm Ryan for Dave and Bobby saying see you next week, cruising with the twos.
Toes up, let's fight.
Yeah, time passing by. Motherfucking time is passing by.